Backseat Producers, episode number 88, The Last Temptation of Christ.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Tony.
And we're the Backseat Producers. And most of you are probably watching Lost, but we're here to discuss The Last Temptation of Christ.
Which tells you exactly how long it's been that we've been sitting on this because we're still trying to catch up with releases.
Lost Season 6 probably is starting, but we're talking about Lost Season 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta get to editing. Sorry about that.
No, it's not you. We've got 6 episodes out there, and I don't want to release them all in a week.
Right.
Just because if you do, people aren't gonna listen. There's not gonna be any downloads. Because I will have to do the final mixdown editing all at once, and I need to get the interim editing.
So I guess
and I need a job.
So I guess my 100 hours of simultaneous content idea is not in the cards. Is that correct?
We can do it.
Yeah, I think we can pull it off.
All right.
I got the time.
Bad jokes aside, let's get this started.
All right. First things first.
Next week,
we are going to be doing
Star Trek Generations.
It will be fun.
Okay. If you say so. All right, this week we're talking about Last Temptation of
Yeah,
Christ.
We can't really banter too much because this episode is going to run long, I think.
I have a feeling it will.
Scorsese. I just got to say that right out. So you guys can all bash me about it for the next hour and a half. His films are very layered. This one is one of the most layered ones he's ever done. It's awesome.
Okay.
I'm just going to say that right off the bat.
As a high-level review, I've only got 2 things. 1, I liked it. 2, Jesus had a New York accent. That tickled me the entire movie.
You mean Jesus or Judas? Or both,
I mean,
of them?
Both of them.
Everybody.
Judas's was worse. The accent was worse. But it was funnier coming from Jesus.
Yo, Jesus, you got to die? What's up with that?
No, that's wine over there. I don't know. I think it's water. Go check it again.
All right. I can't say anything other than what Adam just said.
Damn. Fair enough.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I liked it. I liked it, and some of the anachronistic qualities were really cool. I mean, they were just like, because there were some things that
like
were just so laid back.
Push on those chicks. That was ridiculous. I was watching it at work.
Well, if you're living out in the desert, I mean.
Yeah, this movie is not safe for work.
No, it's not, by the way.
Well, Scorsese's thing, in the commentary, he says, about a half hour into it, he says, you know, something to the effect of, yes, everyone spoke in their American accent, you know. He said
not
American.
Everyone.
Well,
except all the Romans were all of the
Romans were British.
All the Romans were British, and the little girl was also British.
Was also British. Yeah, and she was
without getting more into a spoiler than that.
Well, his
okay, so before we go any farther, are we going to do our typical format where we do non-spoiler and then spoiler?
I guess so.
I mean,
it's
Jesus
an old movie.
Well, Jesus dies at the end.
I know.
But there are spoilers.
The Last Temptation is kind of different.
Yeah, and I mean, the movie does start with text that says, you know, this is fiction. This is not taken from the gospel.
Right.
It makes a very clear distinction of that.
It says that quite literally at the beginning.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's very clear. Of radical people in the 80s said, this is horribly wrong. It's based on the gospels and it's wrong.
Yeah.
And they protested it and they death threatened Scorsese and burned some theaters and stuff.
I don't really, like, having gone to Catholic grade school and high school, like,
That's one thing I wanted to go ahead and throw out, that the three of us who are reviewing this movie have been raised in Catholic theology.
And Scorsese is a Catholic director.
Right.
All of his movies are very Catholic.
Right. So, I mean, the three of us also have that touch point that we have been taught this.
Right.
We've been taught
so I'm pretty comfortable
a lot
with the
of all this.
And when they say history here,
when somebody says a bad word. When somebody says, you know, that's Judas, that's Pilate, we know who they are before their point in the story comes up.
The real question, and I don't know the answer to this question, is whether Nikos Kazantzakis, who wrote the book, was an Orthodox or a Catholic, which I do not know. I would imagine, because he's Greek, he was probably Orthodox. He probably was not a Roman Catholic.
If I had to guess, I would go Roman Catholic.
You would think so?
Yeah. Because it would be more liberal than
the
Orthodox.
The book is very different from
the movie.
I mean, in terms of presentation and style. I mean, it's not different in terms of what happens.
Oh.
Necessarily.
Yeah, see, I would go Roman Catholic just because it's a little less strict and a little more liberal. And this is very challenged the kind of existing thought there. But it's not done... This is what I don't understand about it. People are, this is such a radical kind of affront to the entire Christian religion. It's like, I didn't really get that from the movie.
But you're also framing it being raised in a completely different era.
Right.
Where the people who were protesting this... The people who were protesting this were not people who were being raised, you know, having been in school post. I mean, these are people. The people who were protesting it were raised and were taught pre-Vatican II. They're the ones that had the hardcore stuff crammed down their throat. The fire and brimstone. You know, if you touch yourself, you are going instantly to hell.
Oh,
you know,
shit.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
But all of that stuff is, well, I'm not going to say it's not in the European tradition, but the fundamentalist stuff is distinctly American, the type of stuff we're talking about as we know it. You know, I mean, if you're talking about a liberal orientation to Catholic theology, I don't know anything about the Orthodox.
Right,
sect,
I don't either.
You know,
no,
I don't know if Kazantzakis even was Orthodox, but I guess my point is, you know, the movie is a Catholic movie in the sense that Scorsese directed it through the eyes of someone who was raised Catholic, and Scorsese almost became
a
priest.
I think it's a Catholic movie because of the content as well. It's pretty good.
Well, Catholic / Christian. I mean, we're framing it as a point of
I have less experience
Catholic
with
because
other
that's
Christian
what we
religions.
Because that's I mean we're going to call it Catholic because that's where our experience lies.
Well, the transubstantiation scene where it actually becomes God, I think is the thing that puts it firmly in.
That's
Scorsese is a Catholic.
That's true.
You know
that is true.
You know,
and this movie is playing to the Catholic theology and the mindset there.
Yeah,
I'm with you there.
So I didn't see anything that was blasphemous, honestly.
Well, the screenwriter, what's his name? Paul Schrader. He's a director too.
I was gonna say I know that name.
Yeah, he's directed Light of Day and
and
Born in the USA and some other movies. But his original deal, he wrote Taxi Driver and Raging Bull for Scorsese, and Last Temptation and some other movies for Scorsese. And anyway, he said the movie is not blasphemous because of the scene with Magdalene. He's like, everybody thinks that's the reason the movie's blasphemous. He goes, that's not the reason the movie is blasphemous. He goes, theologically, the movie is blasphemous, however, because Jesus sins. it's not the fantasy.
Right, right,
right.
It's the fact that he helps crucify people, that he rejects right. God, that he, you know, it's right. all the other stuff.
It's all the stuff. It's all the stuff that happens. I mean, and a lot of the stuff happens in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all that stuff that it's like, who is this Jesus?
Right.
I don't know this Jesus that you're presenting to me.
It's not
he's
to...
He's a whiny bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to butcher what Schrader said. What he really probably said, I think, was that Jesus is more human than divine, as opposed to being equally
you know what?
Both.
You know you what? Know? This movie, as a whole work,
I cut you off.
Is probably the most comfortable I've been with a portrayal of the man Jesus.
I will tip my beer to you in agreement.
It's I can understand what he was going through. I can understand his conflicts, his motivations, where the point where he decides to make a change and step into the role that he's supposed to be in.
Yeah.
I get all that. And this is one of the few times where it's not, you know, he's not holding his hands up, you know, he's, you know, being birthed out of the virgin womb and holding his arms up and glowing for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, because...
And that is not the Jesus they present in this
movie.
You
could make the argument that other movies are equally blasphemous from the perspective that, you know...
They ignore the humanity.
Exactly.
You know, and
that's the whole point. That's the whole point of this is, you know, and of the religious aspect of it, is that he is supposed to be human.
Yeah, he's both.
Yeah.
And I think from a storytelling perspective alone, taking away everything religious and all the history behind it, the story's really boring if he just shows up and he's God.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a character.
No,
come
there's no story there.
Like, right. The whole gospel story is lame unless you have the human... Like, if there isn't some sort of conflict there, or like, just like Rooster says, yeah, in the beginning he thinks he's crazy. And he is a demon. And he's like, yeah, if this is God loving me, I kind of want him to stop.
Right.
Right.
This sucks.
Yeah. And God knows. God loves me. I know he loves me. I want him to stop.
Yes. That was awesome.
I want to crucify all of his messiahs. It's such a great line. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I love the humanization of him. Because the entire movie, he messes up. There is a very clear gay vibe that I'm getting from him.
From him and
nobody
who?
Else getting that?
I didn't get the gay vibe.
I thought there was a clear gay vibe with him and Judas. Clear.
I think that's what Mary Magdalene thought. I think I think she had serious doubts about his sexuality.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that
she offered herself to him where all the other men were
she.
Yeah, but that was like
she felt 15th. That she felt that he did not, he was not a man,
right.
Not a man in the machismo sense.
Yes,
but I don't necessarily think
but,
that
but
means
it's not
he's
like,
gay.
but it's not. I mean it's not. You know, capital U, capital R, G A Y. You know, it's not text speak.
Right, but I mean, I don't know if we're not reading too much into the screenplay that isn't
necessarily
there.
I'm not talking about the whole Mary Magdalene thing isn't my deal. I'm just talking about like the long acquaintances between him and Judas. I definitely got a gay vibe.
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, it happens between him and the Baptist too. I mean, it's not doesn't the Baptist kiss him?
Yeah, but it wasn't. I didn't get the gay sense from that.
Oh,
I didn't get the gay sense from it though.
And the whole Baptist thing is, believe me, which in all male high school, I understand the relationship between two guys can exist. Where they're not gay.
But they hug and kiss.
I can't remember the last time I kissed one. Well, I did lose playing apples to apples, and I lost, and I put a bet on the table. I have a gambling problem, so...
We're also holding confession tonight.
I did hear something about apples to apples becoming a makeout game at Scott and Faith.
It was a bad time. The odds were good. There were so many chicks.
I would say
only men would win.
I would say this about that whole thing. If you have a spiritual relationship with another person, I would say the only person I have a spiritual relationship with is my brother. And I don't want to kiss my brother, right, in a million years. But I suppose if the moment came to it, I could kiss my brother and not feel gay. He's my brother, you know. Right. Well, and we have, like, a connection that's a lot deeper, you know.
There's also a cultural thing there, too, which is why I don't think that him and John the Baptist... I don't think there was a gay vibe from him and John the Baptist.
Okay. But
it's the same... I'm talking about the more emotive relationship between him and Judas. I'm not talking about a physical thing at all.
Well...
I'm just talking that there was a serious...
But you don't think it's... You don't think it's spiritual, is kind of my point.
I think it was kind of romantic.
Okay. All right, well, maybe we should... Maybe we should... cut it here to keep people, you know, in tune, and then go to the spoilery section where we can find out just how gay those two are.
Why don't we pause this part of the conversation?
That's fine.
And talk about
some more. Because I think this is interesting. This is badass.
We'll continue this conversation post-spoiler.
All right.
But let's talk about some of the more technical stuff.
Okay.
Acting, directing, writing. Blah, blah, blah. Any issues with any of the performances?
I gotta be honest. Defoe and Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel.
I knew it was right the first time.
Yep, you got it the first time.
I'll edit this to make myself look brilliant. I thought that they were both brilliant.
Yes.
They rocked the house. They brought their shit.
There was a great chemistry between the two. And we will talk about that post-spoiler. I believed when Judas turned to Jesus and said, "If you stray from the path, I will kill you."
That was
and when
awesome.
He said that, it was like, "Oh hell, I don't remember this. I need to go check. I haven't read the Bible, and I don't remember that being part of any of this."
That whole first
the gospel.
Scene,
I don't think he said that.
That whole first scene. Every
but it made me want to check.
Right.
That whole first scene with Judas and Jesus is awesome, and it sets the tone of that relationship for the rest of the movie.
And one of the last scenes.
Fantastic.
One of the last scenes you see those two, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's during the temptation, and it's the scene when Judas and Jesus meet up again. After they're in the midst of the temptation.
Yeah.
That scene is incredible.
Is awesome.
And I think that scene's based on a painting. The scene where he's laying there.
Yeah, we'll
it's based on some
spoiler.
Kind of painting.
Okay.
We'll get there in the spoiler.
All right.
We'll talk about that in the spoiler. But yeah, I think...
I thought that they the two of them together made that movie.
That, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it definitely relies...
Because
on the binary relationship.
I thought Harvey Keitel was an odd choice because I've seen him in a lot of stuff. But watching this movie and considering the character that Judas was portrayed in this, perfect choice.
This will really kill you, okay? Well, Harvey Keitel got his start with Scorsese, okay? Mm-hmm. Harvey Keitel's been, I think, in 5 Scorsese movies. De Niro's been in 8. But basically, every time Scorsese is getting ready to do a movie, he offers those two guys a part, as far as I understand
right.
it.
Right.
So, he offers Keitel the Judas part. He offered De Niro the role of Jesus.
He offered it to a couple people, didn't he?
And De Niro said, "Look, I can't do this, not that I don't want to do it, but I don't think that people will believe me as Jesus." And, if you can
imagine
Keitel and De Niro in the movie being like,
"It would have been a completely different movie.
Why don't you turn that water into wine?" Yeah, all right, I'll do it, you know, I mean, you know, I'm God, you know, but I mean, it's just, you know.
That would have been a completely different flick.
I just think it's interesting that his cast, for Scorsese, like, even though he likes to cast the same people all the time, like...
Kevin Smith?
Yeah, Kevin Smith does the same thing.
I mean, you're seeing a lot of directors do that.
Those two had the chops to pull it off, though. It was good.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Defoe and Keitel were great.
I loved, and if you want to go back to talking about the blasphemy, that's one of the things I loved about Judas. Like, Judas gets this bad rap, but, you know, when you think about it, Judas is kind of necessary to that whole plot and kind of the linchpin to that whole
and they really
sacrifice.
Portrayed, and really, in the terms of this movie, Judas was possibly the most pious of anyone in the film.
Right.
Well,
Jesus
say
included.
Pious. I'd say he was the most fervent.
Faithful. He's the zealot.
He was a total zealot. And
that's who he is.
Yep.
And that whole pushing, that whole was brilliant. I'm sorry. Was.
It. Yeah.
I know you're going to argue with me.
Yeah. No. I know you're not. The book does that. The book is brilliant because for 200 pages, you're like getting the foreshadowing that Judas is going to betray him, Judas is going to betray him. And then when it happens, it's like, what?
Yeah.
This is not what I was told to happen.
Because right. The whole time you're thinking Judas is like, you know.
Judas is this bastard.
Yeah.
Who's like, yeah. He's that bastard who's whipping him. He's like, and when he says, if you stray from the path, I'm going to kill you.
Makes you think, yeah.
That, that's when dad, yeah.
And that started making me think, it's like, is that how the betrayal happens? Yep. The quote-unquote betrayal, as we know it now?
That's the coolest part.
And it really made the rest of the movie more interesting to watch, because it was like all of a sudden you didn't know exactly how this was all going to go down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was a shadow of doubt for a story that we all know. We know
taking
the
story that everybody knows, and then through the characters, making the characters deep enough that the story you think you know, you start to doubt.
Yes.
And that was badass.
That was brilliant.
That was good.
Yeah, that was a great piece of screenwriting. Probably, I'm assuming from the book, because I've not read the book.
The book is the Judas. You get a 200 pages of roughly a foreshadowing that he's divided and he's going to turn against Jesus and betray him. Yeah. So basically.
So the book stays
The movie stays true to the book.
Yes,
the movie stays true to the book.
That part, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the spoiler section, because
right.
I want to comment on that right now, but I can't.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back. We're going to spoil this. It's on the bitch.
Hello, I'm Aaron, co-editor of ideologyofmadness.com, where if we geek about it, we speak about it. And more relevant to this episode of the Backseat Producers, I'm co-host of the Mark Andrew Popecast, a podcast about music, worship, and points in between, available at markandrewpope.com. When I heard Tony and Adam were chatting about The Last Temptation of Christ, I had to get my two cents in. I first encountered Last Temptation of Christ way back in 1985 in my first year of college. I was actually encountered the book before I encountered anything else, and that book was given to me by my priest. He wanted me to look over it. He knew I was minoring in religion when I was away at school, and that was something that he wanted to share with me. It was a book written by Nikos Kazantzakis. And the book was rather controversial in its day, written back in, gosh, I want to say the 50s. The book asked the question, what was it like being tempted as Christ? And really kind of framed God in flesh and, you know, suffering the temptations that, you know, people suffer. So I'll be honest with you. I did not enjoy the book. it was difficult to read. It was originally from the Greek. But what I did get out of the book was the questions that it asked. The questions about, you know, God is man and those temptations that must have been suffered. As I said, the book was awfully controversial. It was banned by the Vatican and actually resulted in the excommunication of the author from the Greek Orthodox Church. But, you know, like I said, the book was not a fun read. It wasn't a happy read. I remember it took me almost a year to finish the thing. It's a great, big, thick, chunky book and not a fun read. You know, it wasn't, something you just breezed right through. In fact, I really rather equate it to any other study book that you might read. You know, you read a chapter, you sit, you kind of digest it. But it wasn't like reading C.S. Lewis, who is a much more easy theological read. Well, fast forward to 1988, when the movie came out, and the movie opened up to a whole new bunch of controversy. And of course, I was working on the school newspaper at the time, and was assigned to write the movie review. So, you know, I had my tickets for a special preview of it, and lining up out there, you know, to see the movie, reporters were there. And then right across from where we were, where the reporters were, was people demonstrating and, you know, lots of you know, fellow Christians very upset about this book. And this is one of the things that I always thought was kind of amusing because, you know, we know in the Bible, in fact, in three of the Gospels, that there is a temptation that occurs. And, you know, a lot of these folks were really upset that, you know, we were even entertaining the idea of a temptation that occurs with Christ. I remember when asking people who are protesting, I'm like, well, you know, have you seen the movie? No. Have you read the book? No. You know, they just knew that they were uncomfortable with the idea. They were uncomfortable with what they had heard. I remember going to church as the movie came out, and my bishop was visiting the church one Sunday, and he was preaching on the subject of this movie, The Last Temptation of Christ. And I remember him standing up there and saying, there was no temptation. And, you know, when you're where he took it from was that Jesus was never tempted. You know, there was something attractive placed out in front of him, but he was never tempted. And, you know, that's not what we're told. You know, we're told that there's a temptation when there is a temptation provided to you, it suggests that it's something that you might like. And this is really what both the movie and the book ask, is that, you know, certainly we accept that, you know, Jesus is God incarnate, and he came down and dwelt among us as a person, fully human. And I would challenge you that if you're a Christian, this is what you believe. This is fundamental, I think, to the faith, that Christ was fully human. And if he was fully human, he was tempted by the same things that you and I are tempted by. He was tempted by, ooh, I probably shouldn't have that cookie. He was tempted by, I really ought to go to bed instead of staying up and doing something more fun. He was probably tempted by things that, you know, he knew he shouldn't be doing. You know, that sounds fun, but I ought not to be doing that. That doesn't mean he did it, but it does mean that it was attractive to him. And we know this because he was human. So for my bishop to stand up there at the pulpit and say he was never tempted suggests that, you know, maybe, you know, he wasn't human. Because in order to be human is to know temptation. Doesn't mean that you have to succumb to temptation, but it does mean that we, you know, are familiar with the temptation. And so that's the thing that I just find really remarkable about the movie. Now, I'll be honest with you, didn't care for the movie. As much as I defend Martin Scorsese's right to make the movie, it's not a movie I enjoyed. Now, it's a movie that I think I needed to see. It was a movie that made me ask some questions. But it was not a movie that I said, ooh, I want to see that again. You know, rather similar to Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. I was glad that I saw it. You know, it was interesting. Didn't ever want to see it again. And I attribute a lot of the reason why I don't like the film is that I don't care for Willem Dafoe as Christ. I don't think that he was particularly personable, which of course was not the kind of Jesus figure that Scorsese was looking for. He was casting someone who was horribly flawed. You know, I think that was the Jesus that he was trying to portray out there, rather than a Franco Zeffirelli, very pretty and almost ethereal kind of Jesus, you know, a noble Jesus. He was trying to show someone who is just as human as you or I, just as frail and just as flawed as you or I. And, you know, if that is indeed the goal, and I think it was, I think Scorsese was very successful in that. I think he was successful in making a movie that students of Christianity should be watching and that theology students should be watching and asking those questions. But did he make a movie that I want to watch every Easter? The answer is most significantly no. So, anyway, those are my thoughts on The Last Temptation of Christ. Please come over to the Mark Andrew Popecast at markandrewpope.com. Thanks a bunch.
And we're back.
All right. So what I was going to say, and this is what I love about the whole Judas character with the spoiler, that they set up the betrayal like Judas gets pissed off at Jesus. It's the total of the... Jesus finally convinces Judas. And that's why Judas betrays him. And he doesn't even betray him. He just does what he asks.
Yeah.
Because he believes so much. And he is more than willing to sacrifice his friend because he knows that's what his friend believes.
The cornerstone of their relationship and of what the movie's about is what Jesus says to Judas to convince him. And he says, you know, we both have a role to play. And I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, we both have a role to play. I've got the easy roll. All I have to do is die.
All I have to do, that was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, it's like, all I have to do is die. You have to betray me. All I have to do is just die.
That was awesome.
And that was just like...
I don't remember the manner in which it happens in the book. I just know that it happens like that.
It was basically, it's like, you've got the hard job.
Yeah.
And that was great.
He's like, you're the strong one. And then he's like, no, I won't do it. He's just like, I won't do it.
He's like, yeah, you will. In the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will, because...
Yeah, and it really convinces him that that was... That the whole Judas storyline is probably the best one in the movie.
It is.
Because what's interesting about the movie is... It has two protagonists. It has two characters that change. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
And that is really why the duality of the film works so well, because it's not like most stories. It has double protagonists.
Yeah. And Judas goes from being a zealot to being faithful.
Right.
And I mean to some they almost might say it's a step backward, but he becomes so much deeper involved. And it's so much more.
Yeah.
Which is why the ending scene where the exchange between Judas and Jesus happens is so awesome.
During the temptation
yes. Where Judas shows up, he's like, dude, WTF,
come on. Hey, you know what? I said if you strayed for the path.
He's like, yes, seriously, you told me you had the easy job and you couldn't even do it.
Yeah.
And then it harkens right back to the first scene where he's like, you're so useless. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And that scene, if you don't mind me slightly tangentially changing subjects.
Oh, go ahead.
That scene.
Like, that's something new around here.
That's the scene where, we're going to probably give larger context to this. He points the angel out and he says,
yeah,
that's Satan.
Yeah,
right. And I think the awesome thing about the movie is how God comes to him as if he's being possessed, mm-hmm. and the devil comes to him like an angel. Because when you think about it, really, God, every time, like if you're a believer, the God stuff is never the stuff you want to do. It's always the stuff you're like, son of a bitch, just leave me alone.
Right.
And then it's the angelic stuff where you're like, that looks nice, I'll do that. And it's really the devil, you know? So it really was more accurate, I think, in terms of forces work.
I love that they kept it consistent, that she had a British accent.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And David Bowie was creepy as Pontius Pilate. I'll put that on the table.
I liked that he was like...
Didn't like it. He was creepy.
He was a little creepy.
He was kind of...
just laid back.
And like not even there.
Yeah.
You know, he was like half a step removed from everything. Like, even from the movie. Like, he had, you know, an earbud in his other ear listening to some, you know, music that he was doing.
Like, he's a Roman bureaucrat and he's just doing another crucifixion. It's like no big deal.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
It's like... Oh, yeah, really should count the skulls up there.
Yeah, and it really
no, you probably
have.
Won't.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have been. Awesome. And it shouldn't have been a big deal for him.
Right.
And it's the consistency of how they played those characters, and it for Pilate, it shouldn't have been a big deal. And it wasn't. I mean, that was consistent, and that was true to how it should have been.
Yeah, that was good.
This is just a side point, because the awkward silence. I think it's interesting that Judas has red hair in the movie. And he had red hair in the book, which was weird. Because when you're reading the book, you're kind of like, I don't know anybody in the, you know... I mean, I could be wrong, though. I don't know anthropology
right.
of that region very well. But I wouldn't think anybody would have red hair. But he has red hair in the movie, and he has red hair in the book.
Well, that would play into what we were talking about before we recorded. He may have... been of Scottish ancestry?
Judas?
No, Pontius.
Oh, was it
There's
Pontius?
There's theory that Pontius Pilate
was. Oh, Pontius Pilate. Oh,
that's why
okay.
Billy Connolly was trying to get David Bowie to do a Scottish accent. But that would have ruined the whole Roman
British accent.
That would have
been weird. Yeah.
You really should count the skulls up there. You crazy lad.
That wouldn't work out so well. It was more Irish.
Yeah, well,
oh, sorry.
That was quite a bit more Irish.
Fair enough.
I thought he was going to start singing... the theme to Lucky Charm for a second.
But I guess we should probably start, the best spoilery part to start at is the temptation. Because up until that point, with the exception of the fact that we've already discussed to an extent that Judas doesn't betray.
Right. You know, there was one thing that I didn't talk about before the spoilery stuff, and it's not really spoilery because
the Celts made it as far as Turkey. There you go. There's an answer. Sorry.
King Arthur?
No.
They take the whole Arthurian legend from a more practical standpoint. Like, Arthur was a Roman, and he had a little place in, like, I don't know, backwards Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the very edge of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And he was the front line for the barbarians when the, I don't know, kind of when they're starting to sack into the territory and take the land. It's actually pretty good, despite the ridiculousness fantasy elements they had. And Lancelot's a badass. But isn't he always?
I might go check that out now. I dismissed that movie as a...
It's not bad.
It looked really
bad. I think Clive Owen could play the gunslinger.
I think
I said it! Bam!
I think I've heard that the extended cut of that movie is different than the theatrical.
I haven't seen the...
I'm not sure.
Well, I think I have the extended cut. I haven't seen it, though.
Okay, so what I was going to say was the scene at the wedding where he turns the water to wine.
That was hilarious.
It was great because it wasn't...
It was so
nice. It was so underplayed.
That's wine.
And that's kind of... And, you know, it goes more into the idea and...
Yeah.
That what Jesus did was not always an event.
Yeah.
It wasn't standing up on top of a mountain with his arms raised and the light coming down.
They showed him kicking back, having a brew.
He's having a drink.
Some people.
And the guy comes up and is like... We're out of wine. What are we going to do? And he's like, you might want to go check that. And he's like, dude, I just put those over there. That's water. He goes, check it again. And it was just like,
yeah.
Are you sure? Come on.
Then he dips the cup, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of, like, chilling with your friends moments.
Right.
Like, when he comes back from the desert, and the other Mary and that other chick take him in, and they feed him and give him, like, water.
Mary and Martha, yeah.
Yeah.
And she starts making fun of him for not having a wife and kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah. there was a whole bunch of those, like, slice of life moments that were perfect.
Yes. And it brought humanity to everything.
I think the women, and we'll probably get into this in The Last Temptation, but the man-woman relationship, this is why I don't understand, we'll talk about the gay thing. This is why I don't understand the gay thing, because... The man-woman relationship, and maybe it's because I've seen a lot of Scorsese movies, like, Jesus' inability to understand women.
Like, that could be where the gay vibe is coming from.
Dude, not only is that where I think the gay vibe is coming from, but in his ultimate fantasy, okay, so everything is perfect for him. Everything is great. He's been taken off the cross. He gets this family and whatever. Then Mary Magdalene dies. What does Satan tell him? Oh, don't worry about it. All women are the same. It's really just a different person. It's just a different face of the same person. Don't worry about it. So really, what they've done is they've created this faceless entity that is a woman, and the only characters that he has actual relationships with are men.
Yeah, but don't you really think that that's because Satan is attempting to diminish his ability to truly love anybody?
Yes.
I mean
it all plays into that. I see your point, though, Adam. I do.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but...
They've completely marginalized his relationship with a woman.
All women.
All women. And have taken
because
away
even,
that...
Because even when his wife leaves, and you know, I'm lost at this point from knowing which women are which at this point during the temptation.
There's two Marys.
But
Mary 1 and Mary 2.
There's right, Mary Magdalene, or let's just call her Magdalene, and then Mary and Martha.
And Martha.
Yeah.
Was it... And he was married again to Mary.
Right. And then he also was with Martha.
Right. Because Mary was out of town and Martha was like, why don't you come back to my place?
So then
the angel comes to him and says, go ahead. All women are the same.
And see, what that really is, though, in the biblical sense, is that is a Solomonic moment where King Solomon says, you know, oh, I'm so wise, but I want to do whatever you want, God. And God bestows all his favor upon him. Well, then Solomon begins to, you know, think he's more wise, and he takes on more than one wife and all that stuff. That's really, I think, what that's all coming from. It's kind of a subtle temptation, you know.
That didn't seem very subtle.
Well, no, well, with respect, it's not like...
Go hit that. It's okay. I mean, it couldn't have been a whole lot more clear.
Well, but what I mean is it's not like handing...
Osmosis, is that what we're calling it now?
Oh, man. Well, anyway, I'm losing my train of thought, but I guess the point is maybe I've seen too many Scorsese movies. It just seems to be more of a Scorsese theme where you know, Taxi Driver, the guy can't relate to women. In Raging Bull, you know, he clearly has issues with right. women. You know, in Mean Streets, the guy falls in love with, I think it's not his cousin, but it's his, like, friend's cousin or something.
Right.
And it's a forbidden relationship, and that's the only reason he thinks it's safe. And, like, there's basically, like, a whole lot of stuff that...
Okay.
I guess my point is...
Maybe, but I what they're trying to do in The Temptation, it plays more into that than I can imagine it would be Martin Scorsese trying to get his thing in there, his women issues in there.
Maybe.
I think so.
Let's put it more specifically.
Or it could be that's what attracted him to this.
Maybe. Scorsese probably was attracted to it on a lot of levels. He almost became a priest.
Right.
You know, and then he decided not to become a priest. So he's attracted on a theological level. He's probably attracted to it on a...
Side note, guys who went to the seminary, thought about becoming a priest, and then decided not to for some reason, are some of the coolest people I know.
Really?
Yes.
Joe Gallagher. Went to high school with him, saw that guy's penis regularly. So he had this game.
That's probably the best context to talk about a seminarian.
We had this game. We just been in choir class.
I've heard about
the
this
game. The teacher's piano had her back to the stage because we used to practice in the theater. So she would be playing. His game was he would put his pants around his ankles and try and shuffle across the stage without her noticing. Which... This is why I totally understand the relationship two guys can have in a non-sexual way. I've seen that man's genitals so many times, I can't even count.
That's a pretty funny story.
Yeah, high school was great.
So,
wow. I don't really know where to go from there. I mean, I'm kind of lost.
Back to Jesus.
It all comes back to Jesus.
Well, maybe specifically, it's best to not say, forget about Mean Streets, but the movies that Paul Schrader has written for Scorsese are very, you know, inability to connect
with a woman. Was that in the novel? Was that portion of it?
Sex dominated Jesus' mind for most of the novel, if my memory serves me correctly. But I mean sex with a woman. I mean, it's very much, I want Magdalene. Then the temptation... Then Magdalene disappears in a different way. The devil takes her. It's the same. It's just different stylistically.
Right.
See,
and I think that was another way to tempt him and to...
See, Kazantzakis, I think...
I think for storytelling and for what they were trying to do in the temp, you know, for the purpose of what Satan was trying to do with the temptation, by removing Magdalene from the picture... But telling him it's okay because what you wanted from Magdalene can be achieved from any woman.
Yeah,
it allows
it diminishes
it. It gave him quote unquote permission to advance a relationship with a woman and have him still feel connected in the same way that he wanted to be to Magdalene. Yet without him seeing the inherent flaws in the temptation. Because inherently, through the temptation, he should have understood. Magdalene should have... One of the first questions she should have asked the morning after was, so what changed?
Right.
But she was gone.
Right.
So she couldn't ask the question. So he couldn't have questioned being tempted.
Right.
Question from the chat room. Was there a messed up female relationship angle in Gangs of New York?
Yeah, there was, actually. Because, well, DiCaprio's character has a relationship with a female who had a previous relationship with his nemesis. And so even though they have this connection.
Was she hot?
It's Cameron Diaz, so choose.
It doesn't matter then.
All right. But basically, yeah, I mean, you know, her history also is tied in with his history because they share the same nemesis, but she's also had a previous relationship with that nemesis. So. But I was trying to think. The book of Last Temptation of Christ, there's a thread in it where, and there's a mention of it in the movie just as a theme. The angel comes and kind of says, you know, or Jesus kind of wakes up, he's taken off the cross, and he's like, wow, I don't remember this place being so beautiful,
right.
You know. And the angel says, you know, earthly life is really quite great. You know, don't worry about heavenly life. You know, we angels, we really envy you for your earthly life.
Right.
In the book, that's much more expanded upon. There's a metaphor where with Jesus and Magdalene, you know, kissing, there's, you know, animals that are, you know, together and they're procreating and there's a big life, earthly life thing going on here. It's very much, you know, not
they're doing it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
That's exactly what they're doing. And so basically there's very much this idea that the temptation is earth is good enough. And gotcha. There is no need for, you know, a life after earth.
I see.
And I think that's a big theme
in yeah, the and book I kinda that's got that
hit in the movie but not very
yeah, it's,
well.
It's explored. touched on, but it was more used as the getting him over the hump, so to speak. Getting him off the cross and to realizing that yeah, you don't have it so bad. You know? What you thought was so bad was your mindset, how you looked at things, and the position you put yourself in.
Yeah.
Stingray, I've seen two Scorsese films now.
Three.
What was the
Color third? Money.
Oh.
Yes.
Color. Let me go ahead and put this on the table. When you watch through the Scorsese film, you probably won't like it. But afterwards...
Talking about them is a lot of fun.
When you're talking about it with your friends, I didn't like Taxi Driver. Then we talked about it, and I'm like, damn, that was a good movie. God damn it. I think if I went back and rewatched that, I'd be much more thrilled with it. I actually did like Color of Money, but...
I would completely agree. Because the thing that...
And you love Scorsese, so...
The thing that I loved about Scorsese was when I would rent his movies, I would watch his movie, and I would think to myself...
What the hell did I just watch?
Yes. And I would leave it, I'd go to school the next day, and I would come home and I would have to watch it again.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I watched Taxi Driver maybe four times in the 5-day period that I rented it. Because there's just so much going on. You don't know whether you like the film or not when you're finished. You're just like, what the hell just happened?
It's not entertainment, it's art.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And it doesn't have a typical ending that you're used to. It doesn't have the payoff. It doesn't have a moral payoff.
I kind of expected the ending to this movie.
After seeing two of them by the third one, yeah, I guess maybe you might.
No, I knew Jesus died.
Well, fair enough.
I didn't expect the faux junk, but, you know, you take what you can get, I guess. You know, this is our second Defoe movie in a row.
Yeah,
he dies tomorrow. I'm weird because at you
in about 3 weeks.
You will have killed
in about 3 or 4 weeks, right before we release the episode. Or Harvey Keitel, that would be pretty tragic too.
Are you still alive?
Yeah, he is.
He's on a television show regularly. Life on Mars.
I don't watch enough television for this.
I told you about it.
Life on Mars. Honestly. There's the Bowie connection.
Yeah, there's bam.
Boom. Yeah, so hopefully Bowie doesn't die to you either, yeah. Tony.
Yep.
Who's David Bowie? I haven't been at Deadpool, so keep talking. That's hilarious.
I think people keep bringing up Gangs of New York. We ought to watch that movie.
I've never seen it.
That's a good movie.
I like how he says, we ought to watch that movie.
Yo, actually, we ought to watch that movie. You know what I'm saying?
Funny story. I actually had it in my Netflix queue. I got it, and then I just sent it back without watching it.
I borrowed it from him. then give it back without watching it.
Oh, speaking you didn't watch of, it?
No. We got to talk to Netflix because maybe yeah, 2 months from now, my
Our freebies go away.
My free subscription is going away. And
I don't like that.
I can't. That can't happen. I just figured out I can stream things to my Xbox.
Hey, that's cool.
And that is hot.
From your Netflix account.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's bad.
I was like 13th Warrior. Let's watch you. Because you're a great movie. And then Katie came over and she's like, I've never seen this before. And I'm like, sit down and strap in.
That's badass. So are there any other thoughts on the movie?
Not really. I enjoyed it.
I'm glad.
Okay, we've talked for what, about 40 minutes?
That's it?
Mister, you can't talk about this movie any way possible in less than an hour.
Well, I mean, I could go on and on. I was asking if you guys had any thoughts.
So what else do you have?
Well, let me think.
Well,
let me go through the movie.
All right. In the beginning,
I think one of the interesting things about the movie is how Jesus' philosophy changes. How the teachings that in Christianity are presented as a block of dogma. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's like
they're conclusions he arrives at.
Yeah.
And not conclusions that he's had all along.
It's like everyone needs to love each other. And then all of a sudden he's like, we need to kick Satan's ass. And then he pulls his heart out and he's like, I've got an axe. Let's go kill some demons.
That was awesome.
And then they go do that. And then he's like, now we have to march against Rome, bitches. Yeah. And so then they do that. And he's like, wait. Right when they were getting ready to march, he's like, wait, no, I gotta die. So it's totally different. Like, he really has no idea what he's, doing. He's just doing what God tells him to do.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Like, the whole journey, not the destination thing, is a total affront to everything that's presented. Because if you read the Gospels, it's like...
It's blasphemous, it's blasphemous to dogmatists.
Yeah.
And I think
dogmatists, is honestly, that a word?
Dogmatists.
Yeah.
Edit that and make it sound good.
I'm on that like stink on shit.
So, it's completely blasphemous to those who take every word as literal truth.
Yeah.
How do you like how I spelled that?
Beautiful.
I think the bigger blasphemy is Judas.
You think so?
I think Judas is a bigger blasphemy than anything else in the film.
I think I don't think it's a blasphemy. I think that the Gospels short shaft him. After seeing the movie, it's like,
well,
wait a minute.
You know, there's a Gospel of Judas.
Right.
But it's not very credible.
No.
Because I bought the copy and read it, and I was excited because, I don't know. I mean, a lot of you guys are cool, and you hang out and do cool stuff. And me, I go home and I read books about the Gospel of Judas, but whatever.
Hey, I've read the Summa Theologia, or at least a good chunk of it.
There you go. Well, anyway, the bottom line is there's a lot of non-canonical Gospels out there, but this one was recently discovered.
Right.
It was a Coptic Gospel found in Egypt or something.
And it was, about 5-10 years ago?
Yeah. Well, it was only about 5 years ago. Okay. It was 2004.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I thought it was a little older than that, but okay.
Well, people knew it existed. But basically, a bunch of...
Well, yeah, the Gnostic Gospels have been...
The Gnostic Gospels have been around a long time.
Yeah, those have been around forever.
But the Gospel of Judas transcript, basically a bunch of, Belocs, to use a Raiders of the Lost Ark reference.
Have to been pull Adam back into the conversation.
Dug it up and we're selling it and passing it around, Don't worry. They've been passing it around, selling it, making a ton of money. So, it came out and I was all excited because I thought it would really kind of, in a way, vindicate a movie that's not based on any Gospels. I was like, this is going to be cool. But it didn't. I mean, it doesn't have the meat.
What I find far more interesting, though, is how it gave a realistic context of why Jesus would have had someone in his group knowing the whole time that he's going to betray him. I mean, other than the fact that he was just letting the flawed guy you know, that he knew that was the moment that it needed to happen, and that he had complete foresight of everything.
Well,
which always was a little fishy to me.
And well, not to me, because one of my big things is, okay, he had to be betrayed. And if you look at, like, Dante's Inferno, where on the left hand of Satan himself, at the deepest bowel of hell, you have Judas. Judas Iscariot, right? So Judas has gotten this crappy rap all through. It is tradition
that
Judas was a bastard. But if you look at the story even now, if you just take the gospel itself, the story needs Judas to happen.
Yeah.
They need Judas to do that. Jesus needs Judas to betray him.
But
Judas is the human element that betrays God
in
the end,
storytelling,
so that God can
overcome. In storytelling, it's Deus Ex Machina, though. It's a prop. Judas is a prop to make an event happen.
Can you blame him for being it, though?
It depends on the gospel you read. Mark is very basic. Judas is just the betrayer. Mm. By the time you get to John...
John's so dirty. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's almost as if it was predestined...
That's what
that
I'm saying.
Judas was going to be this guy who did this. So...
And that's why the character is... why the character is blasphemous, because instead of taking the kind of wishy-washy John... Because John is the most lenient on Judas, right?
Really. I mean, he,
with the predestiny, you can almost
extract
it. Almost
it depends on like
it.
This. It's, you can it's almost like, extract the guilt. It's like, is it his fault that he's the spawn of Satan? No. But is he the spawn of Satan? Yes. I mean, that's what the impression you get.
But with predestiny, you can almost extract the guilt.
You can almost extract the what?
With predestiny, you can extract the guilt. Because he's got to do it.
In some ways.
It's already been ordained that he does it. I mean, you can argue the whole free will. He chooses to achieve his destiny, but... You kind of needed that to happen.
Right.
And this was awesome because it shows the way it happens.
But I still think, I still look at that as a hypocrisy within the dogma. That you have free will and predestiny.
I don't think that's hypocrisy at all.
Yeah, I think that you can choose to achieve your destiny or not.
Well,
I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose of predestiny, but...
But there still has to be motivation for achieving your destiny.
Well, sure.
What would motivate him to...
Well, you're thinking of it in an either-or sense. I mean, you're not really thinking of it in terms of a unitary concept, that free will and predestiny coexist.
I don't actually have a problem with that.
Yeah, I don't either. It's really an Eastern philosophical concept that, you know, in some ways, if you want to get into, like, Taoist ideas, which in some ways Jesus was a Taoist when you read his teachings... You know, in some ways, everything is the way that things go, but you choose to be in harmony with the way things go, or you choose not to be.
That still doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, if you think about it from a theological standpoint, if you believe that God is omniscient and God exists outside of time, then he already knows what's going to happen. So the events have already happened. So,
or like Stingray said, Jesus is Dr. Manhattan.
Well, that also might be true. We're not here to discuss that philosophical quandary.
Yet.
Later. March. Maybe when watch.
We've got 19312 looking up the Nag Hammadi dig. I'm pretty proud of us so far.
So, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that if God knows what is going to happen, that things have already happened, but you can choose to make that happen. The choice is still yours.
Well, that all depends on, though.
He just knows what's going to happen.
But you're even thinking of time linearly. You're not even thinking of time
in
a nebulous concept.
It's both. It's both predestiny and free will. It's a very bizarre concept. We're going to start a religion. It's going to be great. we're going to worship the Fonz. It'll be awesome.
Worship the Fonz.
I'm with you. I'm down. I want to be a high priest. Instead of amen, it'll be
amen.
I like it.
You like my 1970s reference?
High priest wearing leather jackets. Riding on a motorcycle.
I do. I'm impressed.
Leather
jackets,
blue jeans, and white t-shirt.
Adam making a 1970s reference. I'm flat out impressed.
Now
right
let
now
me be honest.
They're no longer
I stole
altar
this
boys
from a plot of Family Guy.
They're no longer altar boys. It's twins.
Oh, God. Well, twins are hot.
All right, moving on. Now that we've gone completely blasphemous.
That's fine. Did we make the hour mark?
I think the whole concept of Judas in the movie does kind of turn the ideas of predestiny and free will.
He is the most blasphemous part of that
movie. Unifies them in a way. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that.
Because the Roman Catholic faith is strongly against predeterminism.
Yeah, I guess it is, really, because it says you know, works, not just faith. Right?
No, it says free will, not predeterminism.
Well, but
to them, it's mutually exclusive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess in some ways it is. I mean, because the fundamentalist dogma is faith alone, right?
Yeah.
It's your faith can save you. You know, you're saved by your faith, not by your works.
Mm.
The Catholic Church says,
it's a combination of both. Or,
yeah, something to that effect. Or that your works are emblematic of your faith.
Right.
Which I think is actually
I think that's a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Just because if you start to be like, well, you're not Catholic, you're going to hell. Yeah, that doesn't really sit well.
Right.
That doesn't, like, even if I were Catholic.
I don't really think that's the word on the street, though, with respect to Catholic dogma now. I think
that's what I'm saying.
It wouldn't sit well.
Yeah.
It wouldn't, if I were a Catholic, it wouldn't be like, yeah, well, if that dude's a good guy, he just wasn't raised Catholic. I mean, because really, when you're born, you kind of toss the dice to see what your parents are.
We've gotten past the whole point that, you know, a baby not baptized is going to go to limbo instead of go to heaven.
Right.
Which was, you know,
dogma for a while.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which limbo, yeah, I never
bought into limbo.
Well, you know, a lot of that's out of Maccabees, which the fundamentalists don't put in their Bible.
I don't buy into limbo. and this is where this is why I'm now a what I refer to as a recovering Catholic.
So does this guy.
You and Sarah.
Or really? Sarah, sorry. So does this lady.
Sarah will kick your ass.
Yeah.
You better watch out.
I'm okay with that.
You might be into it too. You never know. Is that I don't believe in an eternal hell. I don't believe that when someone goes to hell, it's for an eternity.
Where was Spike going to go in season 5 of Angel, Tony?
Don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet.
I know.
because it goes against what I was taught. In that God forgives, and that you go to hell to pay for your sins. Well, at some point, unless the cost is infinite, you're going to pay. You will hit your price, and you'll move on.
I don't know. Suicide's pretty far up there.
So, in dogma, suicide was limbo.
Was it really? I thought suicide was straight ticket to hell.
I thought it was straight ticket to hell, too.
It was straight ticket to hell.
Because God's ultimate gift to you was life.
Yeah, it was straight ticket to hell unless you were sacrificing yourself for someone else. And then
it's straight ticket to heaven. If you lay down your life for somebody else, it's straight ticket to heaven, regardless of whatever sins you have.
It's martyrdom.
It's martyrdom.
Yeah. But that is dogma. In Catholic Church, that is dogma.
I don't know. I mean, a martyr goes to heaven. Yeah. I don't know if you lay down your life for someone else, it necessarily makes you a martyr. I'm not. I think it's if you lay down your life for God.
I think if you lay down your life protecting somebody else. Like, if I took a bullet for you, I would go to heaven.
If it was in a godly way, then yeah.
If
it was because the guy owed you $600, maybe not. I mean, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that if I took a bullet for you because if it was like a government...
Comes unplugged, it doesn't.
Well, the guy was talking for a while. Or Sarah, sorry.
What?
I can't remember who 19312 is.
The audio plug came unplugged from the laptop.
Yeah, but for how long?
Not very.
A second.
Okay, well then.
So yeah.
It's no big deal.
We're in the middle of this conversation.
I thought maybe it was like we were talking for
pretty
a
lame,
half hour.
Pretty lame. Pretty like, lame, and it's like.
Well, I think for the last 15 minutes or so, we've expanded beyond the scope of the movie and just got into religion.
Yeah, but not really. To bring it back around.
It's a man cast.
Roger Ebert just wrote a book on Scorsese. Mm-hmm. And picks his 5 great films or something. I can't remember what 5 are. Last Temptation's one of them. I'm sure Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and Goodfellas are 3 of them. So that means there's only one more out there.
Get out of here.
But anyway, I guess Roger Ebert apparently had a conversation with Scorsese, and you know, Roger Ebert was like, "Do you really believe that you're going to go to hell for having married more than one woman?" Because Scorsese's been married more than once. And Scorsese said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm going to hell." And that was it. I mean,
interesting.
He thinks he's going to hell, I guess. I mean, I don't know if he still thinks that, but
they were probably behind us, Tony. They were still dealing with the lag, which is why they
No, we're not getting audio.
Type louder.
Divine intervention.
I mean, I live close to him, but I'm not that scared.
There we go.
Okay, so we've performed an exorcism, and we're back.
You have to start the broadcast again.
Yeah. Okay, now we've performed an exorcism and we are back.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sarah.
Basically,
the lightning bolt came and struck us.
Just trying to get back to the movie. Scorsese, as of a conversation with Roger Ebert at some point, I guess, believes he's going to hell anyway. Because he's married more than once. I mean, he believes in hell. He doesn't water it down. So I thought that was interesting. Because we're talking about, you know, heaven and hell and whether it exists. The director of the movie believes it exists. He believes he's going there.
I can't
maybe
see them. I'm going to bring out a camera next week. Screw you guys. Dun, dun, dun.
Who's pussies?
We are.
Why are we pussies?
Because we won't do a video.
I'll do a video.
I won't.
If you want to see my gut, if you want to see my gut on video, yeah, we can do that.
I don't really know why anybody wants to see two fat guys talk about movies.
We should change the name of the podcast.
Two
if we do that.
Fat guys.
Two fat guys
and a silent partner.
Yeah. Two fat guys and a ninja.
All right, now you can pause it.
All right. All right. Oh, your shit, you can have it back, Stingray. Just for that, I may or may not put up a sidebar that has,
you know what,
the upcoming movies
I
in
think
it.
Next week it's just going to be an entire episode where we set the webcam up and it's my ass. an hour staring at my ass while we talk about a movie. That would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious.
I'm down.
Just gonna show up and talk.
That's right. I know.
We'll set up a screen.
I will probably be the only podcaster who's ever done the whole "I'm not wearing pants" shtick, and then be for real. I can type the walls to minimize.
The backdoor producers.
Oh, we've heard of that before.
Anyway, I guess it's probably
said
a good.
That before, I'm sure.
I guess it's probably a good place to
tie it off.
Cut it. Although I want to hear.
Oh, I don't
just
know.
For posterity.
With that commentary, we could go back to the gay angle.
we could go back to the Judas Jesus dub. But I want to hear for posterity your picks for Oscars, because they're picking them tomorrow.
Okay, tomorrow morning they're supposed to be picking Oscars. My picks for Oscars. I'm just going to do Best Picture, just because.
Well, yeah.
And these are mostly just guesses because I haven't seen the movies. Okay. Let me just throw that out there.
I have four picks.
Dark Knight, I think, is going to be. I think is going to make the list. It's.
Me too.
I think that's actually a wild card, though. Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yep. It's on my list.
I think The Wrestler may have some cred now that it had some Golden Globe wins. So, The Wrestler as number three. Revolutionary Road has a chance. I think it's an outside chance, but I'm gonna go with Revolutionary Road as four. So, I'll go four of the five.
Okay. You?
And well, let me go... I mean, because, and then there's the obvious Milk.
Yeah.
Milk, Gran Torino.
Milk, Gran Torino, first. And now I'm up to seven.
Right,
I'm
right, yeah.
Five.
I went Milk, Gran Torino, Dark Knight, Benjamin Button, And then I think Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire.
I think that's going to be the fifth. So those are my five.
I'm going to have to go with...
I haven't seen any of those movies except for Dark Knight.
Right.
I'm with you.
I'm going to have to go with Milk, Dark Knight, Slumdog, The Wrestler, and...
Wienerface McNabb.
Yes. Which is what they're calling the quarterback in Philadelphia these days. Anyway, what did I say? Milk, Slumdog, oh, and Button, Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
So those would be my five. Although I would have to say, I just want to say this for the record, Changeling was the best movie of the year, and that's the Clint Eastwood movie that should be nominated.
Really?
That movie was phenomenal. That was the best movie of the year. Period.
That was the one with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that movie was phenomenal.
I've not seen that one.
That's the one with the kid?
Yeah. That movie was insane. I forgot I was even watching it. That's how good it was.
Wow.
I was just like, I haven't had that experience in a long time.
Okay, and since this is will likely not be released until
April.
Well, it odds are it will be released very close to, probably right after the Oscars. Just because of the way the release schedule's going. For those in the chat room, and if you guys are local to St. Louis, or if you want to make a trip out of it, generally, the day before the Oscars, AMC theaters nationwide, but here locally they do it. They do a Academy showcase
of the
showdown, whatever, and they show all five Oscar-nominated movies for Best Picture all on the same day. And back to back to back. And it is a long day. The Oscars are February 22nd. So a month from tomorrow. So this event would take place a month from today, which is a Saturday. The Oscars are always on a Sunday. This event takes place on a Saturday. And it's literally like 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. kind of thing. And it's a long day. It's five movies. You get like about a half an hour break in between movies, and that's it. But and it's intense. I mean, to watch five movies like that back to back is
I would reckon
it is pretty intense, especially when they're of this caliber. I mean, looking at I've done it 2 years now, and then if I'm able to do it this year, it'll be three. But it is an exhausting, but pretty cool thing, especially going into the next day. You've got a lot of opinions about how wrong people are going to get the Oscars.
I would say if The Dark Knight doesn't win, that won't surprise me at all.
No.
But if The Dark Knight doesn't get nominated for Best Picture, I will be pissed. It should definitely be nominated.
It'll be nominated.
It should be nominated. And I mean,
Nolan
should
at least get a director nomination for sure. I mean,
I know a lot of people have said that the Oscars will snub it. I don't see that happening just because, I mean, we've seen Lord of the Rings win a Best Picture. So I think we're over that that whole genre
Charlie
picture
King
thing.
Was okay, but...
Well, the first one should have won.
Fellowship?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, the first one should have won. I think.
We'll have to do those three movies at some point.
At some point, yeah.
I have many thoughts.
It's 11 hours of film.
Actor? Okay. I do have one thing to say, and I'm going to put it on record. And we talked about it before, and I don't think it was... I think
yeah, true. ROTK did win for all three. Sorry. Go ahead.
I don't think anybody was in the chat room, but I'm going to go ahead and throw out... I think what's going to happen is that Heath Ledger is going to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He will likely win Best Supporting Actor, but he should not be nominated Best Supporting Actor. He should be nominated Best Actor, Best Lead Actor, and I seriously doubt he would win as Best Lead Actor.
He should, though, in my opinion.
He could. I haven't seen the
performance. Well, I haven't seen The Wrestler.
I haven't seen the performance he's up against, but it's far more likely that he would not win in a lead acting position. Whereas supporting actor, it's going to be a slam dunk.
Yeah. Which is weak, man. He Stingray says he's the main character of The Dark Knight. It's true. He has more face time than anybody else.
Yeah, he is the main character. He is the lead actor in that movie. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, off the air, it's like giving you're nominating the varsity quarterback for junior varsity MVP.
Yeah.
Guess what? He's going to win.
Yeah. It is pretty retarded.
Yeah.
But that's what the Oscars do all the time.
Well, because it's not the Oscars that do it. It's the voting body that decides who gets positioned as what. Theoretically, he could actually get nominated in both categories.
I guess you're right.
He could. For the same role?
I didn't know that.
Because it's the voting body that decides. That decides where the nominations lie. The studios request from the voting body where they want you to vote, but that's not how the voting takes place.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did some research on this because I wanted to understand how it worked.
And, so, let me get this straight. So Dustin Hoffman does Tootsie, and he could win Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress?
And Best Actor and Best Actress.
Wow. Or that's what I meant.
He could win all four.
He could win all four.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Except the whole penis thing might preclude him from being the Best Actress.
Well, who knows? I mean,
maybe.
Maybe.
Depends on how good an actor he is.
And it depends on if he shows it, probably. How greased up it is.
What? Why does the show always make me watch? We're not watching The Crying Game. All right, we got to get out of here. I got to pee. I got to go watch Lost. Adam would probably see it. I know you're behind in the conversation, so we're not talking about junk yet where you are.
Well, alrighty. I'm glad you guys decided to do this movie because I like it.
Oh, I thought it was a great movie. It was a fun one to discuss.
So,
all right. So we will see you guys next week for Star Trek Generations.
True.
It Generations. Will be. Oh, God, pick this.
I think that was you.
All right.
See you.